So here we are. Welcome officially to your Reiki Practitioner Certification Weekend. So here are objectives for our Reiki Level 1 and 2 certification. Upon completing this training, you'll understand what Reiki is and how energy healing works. You'll know the origins of Reiki and the system of Reiki. You will become a channel for Reiki, Universal Life Force Energy. You'll be able to channel Reiki through your body and breath to yourself and others. You'll be able to channel Reiki across time and space, which means across physical distance and ahead of time, and even back in time. And you'll know how to work with the first three Reiki symbols. So I have to begin a course of this nature always with a disclaimer. The statements in this course have not been evaluated by the FDA and are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent disease. The information and techniques in this course do not constitute medical advice. You should always seek medical advice from a qualified doctor in the case of illness. While all suggested practices are offered in good faith, I cannot accept responsibility for any illness arising out of the failure of you to seek medical advice from a qualified medical doctor. So I'd like to begin just by sharing a little bit about myself and my background. I'm a Reiki and Energy Healing Master Teacher. I'm also a certified aromatherapist and a certified aromatherapy teacher. And I've been a holistic health practitioner and educator for the majority of my career. I own the Sacred Wellness School of Healing Arts, which you may previously know as the Mind-Body Reiki School of Energy Healing. I changed the name of the school a couple of years ago when I started to incorporate plant medicine into my work. I've been teaching Reiki since 2015 and practicing Reiki for myself before that. And my educational background is in nursing. So I practiced as an LPN for a couple of years. I'm a yoga teacher. I've been a yoga teacher since 2009 and also a fitness professional since 2010. And I also have health coach training. When I was an LPN, I discovered Reiki. And even though I had been interested in metaphysics and the occult my entire life, especially my entire teenage life, when you're a new grad, you know, you're not really interested in anything metaphysical, as you can imagine. So it really came to me in the most serendipitous way. I was pregnant with my second child. I have three children at the time, and I had a lot of pain. And if you've ever been pregnant, then you know that when you're in pain and you have discomfort, nobody wants to help you. Nobody in the medical field wants to help you because you're pregnant. Nobody in the holistic health and alternative field wants to help you either because you're pregnant. Nobody wants to touch pregnant people, right? Because, you know, liabilities. So I put a call out into the universe asking, there's got to be something out there that can help me with my pain that has no side effects. Does that exist? And I did my research, and the only thing left standing was Reiki, as it were. I had a colleague in my office. I was working in community health, and he is an OT. And he and I were the only ones in the clinic who were really, really into holistic health and metaphysical stuff. But even for me, Reiki was really, really pushing it. I had a few people in my life who practiced Reiki, but they couldn't really describe it to me, which really influenced how I teach Reiki now, because I'm really passionate about making sure that you all as practitioners moving forward, when people ask you what Reiki is, you can tell them. And further to that, I hope that people who come to see you for Reiki sessions and any kind of education or healing session, that you can impart the knowledge of Reiki to them in such a way that when people ask them what Reiki is, they can give a straight answer. Because that's something I just couldn't get. I couldn't get a straight answer. Now, as it were, of course, because things always happen this way, one of the people who would soon become one of my major teachers had just started her practice. Jackie started the Sukha Shack around this time. And I knew her through a friend. She had taken the same yoga teacher training that I had taken after, like a couple of classes after. So I knew of her. And she was doing Living Social and Groupons. And so I knew that there were coupons going around for energy healing. So on top of the fact that I had pain and discomfort, you know, just from being pregnant, nothing to do with the pregnancy itself, just the body. This was also during the time I had just become a Zumba instructor, so I was doing a lot of activity. And then my wrist the ligaments just got really, really loose. It wasn't tendonitis. I had to just start wearing a brace. I couldn't hold a pen. I couldn't drive properly. I couldn't weight bear on my wrist. I just had to walk around with a brace. Nobody could explain what was happening. So I thought, okay, I got to give this energy healing thing a try. But I didn't want to pay full price. So I thought, I'm just going to wait for a coupon, you know. And the very next day, a coupon landed in my email inbox. So I thought, okay, fine, whatever. I've wasted $40 on random stuff before. I don't mind paying $40 for a nap if that's all that's going to happen. I'm just going to go pay $40 and line in this person's table. She's going to do nothing and I'm going to have a nap. I'll do that. So as you can imagine, I went for this Reiki and energy healing session and it was the most incredible thing. Just like everybody said at the beginning, you know, I couldn't stop thinking about it. I just remember thinking that it was the most relaxed I'd ever felt in my entire life. I remember thinking that I had fallen asleep, but I hadn't fallen asleep. I had actually reached an altered state of consciousness and I held it very clearly throughout that entire session. And for the first time in a long time, I thought to myself, I don't understand how this works, but I need to know more. So still not willing to invest any kind of money in something like this, I went to the library and I borrowed all the books and I found DVDs on Reiki. And I found these DVDs, which were, you know, reprints, if you will, of old VHS tapes by Steve Murray. And it was a distance healing attunement. So a Reiki healing attunement on the DVD. And the DVD basically said, follow the instructions and you'll receive a healing. So I thought, well, what's the worst that could happen? You know, I can do that. It's free. So I borrowed the DVD. I popped it into my DVD player and I followed the instructions. And my intention at the time was for my wrist, which was really, really bothering me, as you can imagine. So I did the DVD and then I forgot about it. And a couple of days later, I realized that I had stopped wearing my splint completely. I was able to weight bear. I was able to hold things. And I couldn't really explain. I hadn't done anything else. So I found my coworker, the OT, and I came up to him and I said, my wrist is healed, but it was from a DVD. Isn't that weird? And he turned to me and said, no, that's how energy healing works. That stuff happens to me all the time. And then he left. He went on about his day. So I thought, oh, okay, that's how energy healing works, huh? So I thought, fine. So I found a practitioner and I started seeing her as I got more and more pregnant. I was getting regular Reiki sessions and it was so helpful. And after a few sessions, it didn't take me long before I realized, you know, I need to know how to do this because I know I can. You know, you read any book on Reiki and you know that anybody can learn this. It's one of those things that is so empowering and that the author always tries to impart that you really, if you're interested, you should learn it. And plus it was getting, you know, I figured I could probably save a lot of money because if I could just do this myself, right? So I eventually got my Reiki level one and my Reiki level two. And I was incorporating Reiki into my whole life and even practicing Reiki with my kids. And my kids loved Reiki so much at this point that I thought, you know, they're asking for Reiki a lot. Well, my littlest one was still a baby, so he wasn't really asking. But my older one, who's always been a very, very nervous character, Reiki was really helpful for him to go to sleep and to calm down. I originally was really motivated to do Reiki to be able to channel Reiki to him. But I found that the more Reiki I did for myself, the calmer I became, and therefore the calmer he became. So I ended up doing a lot less Reiki for him than I had anticipated. I don't want you to misunderstand me here. I'm not saying that Reiki cures anxiety or that it cures depression or anything like that. I'm just sharing my experience that I found it helpful for me and that I noticed a change in him. And that's all I'm saying. Okay. So I decided that I wanted to get my Reiki level three master teacher level for the sole purpose of being able to attune my sons so that they could be Reiki channels themselves and they could heal themselves whenever they wanted to. So I enrolled with Jackie. I actually got, throughout the years, I had received many other workshops, but Jackie, I will remember the most because it was the largest time commitment for me at the time. And she did her Reiki teaching in a shamanic style. So she had an energy healing training that incorporated Reiki and she's a shaman. So that's where I got one of my main bits of education. So throughout this journey with Jackie, I realized that you know, maybe I would like to share Reiki too. So to give a little bit of context of how I ended up teaching Reiki, in and around 2010, the Capital Care, the company I worked for, laid off all of their nurses. at least all of their LPNs at the time. And so I had just graduated, so I didn't really have a position to go back to. I was laid off during maternity leave. And so I didn't, I didn't really have a job to go back to. And I like to share that because I think a lot of people, when they look at holistic health professionals who have a history in the medical field, they assume that they left the medical field in a huff. And that's not what happened with me. I loved nursing. I loved my job. I loved my coworkers. I totally 100% believed in everything that I was doing. And I still do. And working in community care, especially with geriatrics and mental health, honestly, one of the greatest things I've ever done in my entire life. So I did not leave in a huff. I was with many other nurses unceremoniously, you know, given the boot. And that's just what happened. So I, at that time, invested in an event planning business, and having my holistic health background as a health coach and being a fitness instructor, I learned pretty quickly how to plan events and how to do workshops and how to teach and all of that. I learned it the hard way because you just got thrown into business. I didn't take a business training for this or anything. I just did it. And while I was doing all of that, I was practicing Reiki on my own. And at some point I asked myself, I love Reiki so much. I have the ability to attune other people. I wonder if other people might be interested in learning Reiki too, because yeah, I like it. Maybe other people will. So in April of 2015, I taught my first Reiki level one course, and the rest is history. And here we are. So I just wanted to share where I'm coming from there. I like to think that I have a very practical, down-to-earth way of sharing things. I like to call my Reiki workshops kind of like Mythbusters workshops, because again, if there's myth with anything, more than any other practice, even more than crystal healing and the chakra therapy courses that I teach, Reiki has so much garbage attached to it, which really just takes away from everybody's experience. And so I'm really passionate about sharing the truth of what Reiki is and the essence of what it is, and letting people come to their own conclusions rather than being told by some person with an agenda what it is. The truth is Reiki is universal. It really is. It doesn't belong to anybody, as much as people might try to trademark different names, which is absolutely your right to do. But Reiki itself cannot be owned. It cannot be devalued. It doesn't matter how much money somebody charges for Reiki, whether they charge $0 or $1 million, you cannot change the value of something that is inherently all around us and for all of us. So with that, I'm going to move on into the nuts and bolts of the course here. So this is the part one of our Reiki level one training. Okay. So what is Reiki? Reiki is a Japanese word, and Rei, that portion of the word, means universal, omnipotent, omnipresent, and omniscient. So everywhere, everything, infinite. Ki is synonymous with life force, prana, chi, or qi, as you may have seen it spelled for qigong, tai chi. When we're talking about life force, another way of understanding ki is the phrase Holy Spirit. So most people understand what Holy Spirit means, right? Here in the West, we know what that means. And thinking about how God breathed life into Adam in that story, right? That animating life force, that's ki. So anything that is alive, anything sentient has ki. So you and I, we all have ki in us. So Yasui Reiki is the method of channeling universal life force energy as taught by Dr. Mikeo Yasui. So he's called Dr. Mikeo Yasui. He was given an honorary doctorate and honored by the emperor of his time due to his contribution to Japan through his work with Reiki, which we will get into later. I like to mention this right off the hop because there are many different kinds of Reiki out there. And usually if someone is practicing something other than Yasui Reiki, they will specify. So for example, holy fire Reiki, angelic Reiki, fairy Reiki, a million types of Reiki, you know, celestial healing light Reiki, or what have you. Okay. But usually if somebody just says Reiki, they typically mean Yasui Reiki. All right. So why practice Reiki? What's the point of all this? So the benefits of Reiki are vast, and there really is no way. It's kind of like trying to contain an ocean in a glass. But for now, I can say that the benefits that I've experienced from Reiki and that others have experienced and shared with me, including my clients and my students, include deep relaxation, an increased sense of peace and calm, mental clarity, pain management. It clears and balances the chakras. It heals and strengthens the aura. It increases your psychic senses. So all of your clairs, clairvoyance, clairaudience, clairsentience, all of that. It provides energetic protection, and it aids with mediumship and shamanic work. So Reiki is helpful in the full spectrum of things and all of the modalities. So whether you're a nurse working in the ER, and you're channeling Reiki to keep yourself calm and centered and to protect your energetic boundaries and to allow you to do your very, very best work so you stay clear in your mind, right? And to maintain your compassion. Or on the complete other end of things, you're a professional tarot reader and you're constantly communicating with the realms of spirit. You know, that's very, very exhausting work. You need to maintain a particular kind of vibration. So you need to A, protect your energy and also stay grounded at the same time. Well, Reiki can help with all of that. I want to share a quick story about pain management. So we can't make promises with Reiki. We really, really, really can't. But the fact of the matter is it works. We don't know why it works, but we do know that it does. There have been experiments and research studies done on Reiki, for sure. Of course there have. But we really can't pinpoint why it would help with pain in some instances and why it doesn't. Okay, so if you remember the story that I just shared about the spontaneous healing that happened with my wrist, and it never bothered me again. And I mean, it wasn't a pain that I imagined. I really don't know where it came from, but I do know it went away. Recently, over the last couple of months, I needed a root canal because I had an irreversible pulpitis, which if you've ever had that, it's one of the most painful dental ordeals. That was what the specialist told me. He said, you know, it's literally one of the most painful things, not just in dentistry, but on earth. And I can tell you, you know, I've had three children. I have had three vaginal births, and the pain that I experienced with that was up there with labor pain. So I know it was painful. The thing with that kind of condition is you don't know it's a tooth pain because you have this trigeminal nerve in your face and it just refers everywhere. So for a few weeks, I really thought I was dying. I thought there has to be some sort of blockage or tumor in a lymph node or in my neck or something's happening. I'm dying. Nobody can explain the pain. I was teaching a Reiki level 3 workshop during that period of time. And I'll always remember it because not long after that workshop, I ended up having my root canal and it was fine. But I was having incredible 10 out of 10 pain for days. But for that workshop weekend, that Saturday and Sunday, the pain went away. I don't know why it went away. I wasn't asking my students to give me a healing. I wasn't even thinking of it. I was just gritting my teeth and, you know, working. Like, I have to teach. I don't know what's wrong with me. I'm in pain, but these people have paid. I got to show up and I got to teach. That whole weekend, I didn't even take any pain medication. Of course, Monday came along and everything came back with a vengeance and it was worse than before, but I got treated for it long after. I just wanted to share that because it's one of those random mysteries that can happen. Who knows why? You know, in my mind, I'm theorizing, well, maybe the energy carried me through. And I do believe as well that, you know, consistently channeling and clearing that energy eventually pushed me down the path that took me to the place that eventually led me to sitting in the dentist chair, which I never thought of going in the first place, but it forced me there where I learned what was actually happening so that I could deal with it, right? Who knows? But just sharing a story. All right, I'll just share a little bit more about Yasui Reiki. We'll get into the history a lot deeper after the second part. So Yasui Reiki, the system was founded by Mikao Yasui in the late 1920s. It originated in Japan, and then the practice migrated to the US and Hawaii through Madame Takata. From Hawaii, the practice of Reiki grew and flourished all over the world. You may see the phrase Yasui Shiki Ryoho, which refers to the Yasui system of natural healing. Yasui Reiki is currently one of the most well-known energy healing practices and is practiced in almost every country. I would say pretty much every single country, right? And there are now countless forms of Reiki, as I said earlier, Yasui Reiki being the most common. So like I said, unless someone actually specifies the kind of Reiki that they're practicing or teaching, you can assume that it's going to be Yasui Reiki. Now, to further complicate things, of course, I'm a Yasui Reiki teacher. Many people are Yasui Reiki teachers. We don't all teach Yasui Reiki the same. Of course, right? It's just like yoga. It's just like meditation. It's just like any of these other modern holistic health practices, which are derived from ancient spiritual practices. You have to understand how this works. If it's ancient or if it's oldish, you know, I wouldn't say that 1920s is ancient at all, but I mean, it's old enough. So if it starts all the way down the line here and was passed on to here and someone here and someone here all the way down to you, I mean, it's just a really long game of telephone, right? So we're doing our best. At the end of the day, I always like to say, if it works for you, perfect. Keep it, you know, keep it until it doesn't work for you anymore. Does that make sense? All right. So before we get into how energy healing works, I would just like to pause here and ask you to reflect on anything that you've read within the self-help and metaphysical field vis-a-vis the law of attraction. So maybe you've read books like The Spirit, the Secret, The Magic, anything by Abraham Hicks, anything really by Hay House, the work of Louise Hay. And I just want you to sit and consider for a moment how that's resonated with you and how that has come into fruition in your life. Okay, so I'm going to explain here in a very elementary way how energy healing works. So basically how energy healing works is by the principle of vibrational resonance. And so what that looks like, the reason I'm creating a bigger screen here, is that two opposing vibrational frequencies cannot coexist because they're always going to get in sync with each other one way or another. So in a very plain, superficial way, you could say that if you have something with high vibration sharing space with something with low vibration, one of three things is going to happen. Either the higher vibration will drop down to meet the lower one will rise up to meet the higher one, or they're going to meet in the middle. Okay. Now, this is demonstrated in everyday life with things like grandfather clocks. So if you were to fill a whole room with grandfather clocks, all ticking and talking out of sync, and you leave them there, over time, they're all going to tick and talk in sync. Or if you have a room full of instruments and you strum a note on one string instrument, you're going to find that every other string instrument in that room will start to vibrate at that same note. And on a physiological level, if you have a period, you know that people who are menstruating, who spend a lot of time together, their cycles tend to start to sync up. And we know this to be true because if you think back to when you first got your period and all of the other people in your classroom who started menstruating, it was probably around the same time. And that's usually the case. Or people who live together in close quarters, right, for very, very long periods of time, their cycles start to sync. It's one of those things that just happens because our bodies are resonating. You may have experienced it in a classroom setting if you've ever taken something like a weekend workshop. And this always happens when I teach a weekend workshop, even over the course of just a couple of days. And it happens not just in in-person settings, but it absolutely happens in an online Zoom setting as well, where people start to almost read each other's minds because we're all here for the same purpose. all of our chakras are open. We're all energetically very open and receptive to this information. And we're all thinking along the same lines. And it's kind of harder to see in an online setting because you're not able to do that same repartee back and forth conversation. But I absolutely do see it in weekend or retreat settings where people are having the exact same thought, or you're completing each other's sentences and you just met the other day. So how can you know each other that well, right? So it's that concept of vibrational resonance. So to bring that into the world of energy healing, that's why we work with energy. Because first of all, we do know that we're connected energetically and physically, and what affects the physical body will eventually affect the energetic body and vice versa. There is an interesting picture in your manual that talks that, you know, shows pictures of high vibe or low vibe things. And I'm very cautious with the whole, with being very flippant with, you know, the whole high vibes only type of thing, right? And certainly, there's nothing empowering about high vibes only. Now, I mean, it's up to you. You may not be in the state of mind at any given point to tolerate a variety of energies. But, you know, we have this full vibrational experience. So is it fair to always just say high vibes only? Who knows? Not really. but suffice it to say, when we're doing things in with our physical body that make us healthier and happier. And I'm not talking about saying that some food is better than other food. All food is good, and that some exercise is better than other forms of exercise. Any way that you can move your body in a way that makes you feel good is good, right? That will affect your energetic body, of course. And again, we know that energetically, mentally, emotionally, if these blockages and issues are not dealt with, they may eventually manifest as illness in the physical body. Now, I'm very careful when I say that, okay, because like I was sharing earlier, you don't want to consider yourself to be a victim, neither of yourself or of other people, okay? So it says here on this slide, a person or an object's energy will shift in response to the energy it's exposed to. That is true, right? But you are not a victim of other people's energy, okay? You're not. You're not a victim of your own energy, and you're not a victim of yourself or your past life or anything like that. So it's time to stop the blame game, right? I've had enough of hearing about this in the New Age metaphysical world. It's ridiculous. It doesn't help anyone or anything, okay? We need more compassion, and we need more understanding, and we need more surrender, because we don't know the answers to everything. We don't. We don't know why things are happening, and we just have to be okay with that, okay? But suffice it to say, this is the principle of vibrational resonance. Does that make sense to everybody? You are not a victim of your family. You're not a victim of your circumstances. When I gave you that little demonstration with the high and the low and the meeting, okay, it's more complicated than that. That is true, but there is so much more than that, because number one thing you have to remember, if you get anything out of this weekend, is that it's your intention that's the key. All right. So let's say that you are going to go into a meeting and you work in a toxic environment. And we all know what that means. I don't have to explain what toxic work environment means. And let's just say everybody in that toxic work environment is having a really, really bad day. So on top of the fact that the energy is already down, everyone's having a bad day, and you're going to have that meeting. It's really up to you what happens. You can't look at, a lot of people do this. They say, oh my gosh, because of the circumstances that I'm going to be walking into, I'm going to have a horrible time. The meeting will go horribly. I'm going to have all this yucky energy on me at the end of the day. I'm going to need to do all these things later on to make myself feel better, because other people are bad and I'm good and I'm up here and they just don't get it, right? That's not how it works. Well, if that's your attitude, that's absolutely what's going to happen. It doesn't matter that there are 20 people around you with what you perceive to be bad energy. What only matters is your own energy and your decision. You could go in there and set the intention to connect to Reiki, have strong boundaries, be a running conduit of life force energy, loving energy, and compassionate energy. And you could say, you could set the intention, regardless of what happens at that meeting, regardless of what anybody says to me or how they're acting towards me, I'm fine. I'm going to have a good day. I may not enjoy that experience. It may not be the best part of my day, but I'm not going to let it ruin my energy. You can see your aura being strong. You can imagine, you know, harsh words bouncing off your aura. And you can also trust that if somebody does say something to you that is so painful and hurtful and even makes you cry and leave the room in a huff, that you have the strength and the power to heal from that, right? That you can take it, you know? Imagine a vast ocean, right? I love using water as an example. You know, like if you throw something against a wooden door, maybe it smashes or something. If you throw something hard enough against wood, it might also break, but then you're also scraping the wood. What happens if you take something really, really big and you throw it into water? Just takes it all in. Where'd it go? It's gone, right? It's gone. It's been assimilated. It doesn't matter in the vast scheme of things in that energy. Whatever it is that you like to visualize, you can decide that, right? So it's your intention that's the key. So even though for all intents and purposes, you're in a situation where there's so much powerful, dominant, negative energy. And I say negative because who says what's negative? It's your perception, right? You are perceiving it. And I'm not saying that your perception is not valid. Of course it's valid. I'm just saying it's yours, right? Because other people in that room may be having the time of their life. You know, you might be the wet blanket to them. You don't know that. It's not your business. Your business is your business, how you decide to react to something and your energy. You are responsible for your energy and your happiness. Okay, so your intention is the key. All right. So to bring it all back to, therefore, then how Reiki works, if you decide to keep your vibration high by maintaining your wits about yourself, by being humble, by meditating before going into stressful situations, by drawing from all of your whole spiritual toolkit, whatever you have, then you've kept your vibration high. And then you're increasing the likelihood of you entering that situation and actually raising the vibration overall. And maybe then everybody has a great day, not just you, because that's usually what happens, right? When you really take responsibility for your energy and what's happening in your life and in your body, and you can surrender the outcome, it kind of helps everybody. And I know you know this to be true. I know you've seen it happen. Maybe you've experienced it from other people as well. Maybe you were one of those people in a meeting where you were having a bad day and someone walks in and you just feel like, oh, thank God they're here. They're just so nice and they're so, you know, they're just so chill and they just listen and, you know, nothing seems to get at them. And I just feel better now that they're here, right? We all know people like that. Okay, so with how it reflects with Reiki, Reiki being universal life force energy, it's not just any energy, and it's not the same as, you know, there is the energy that animates each and every one of us, right? But we're talking about source energy, like that pure source energy. You might see it as like divine energy, which cannot be trumped. So you have this super high vibrational energy, which is Reiki. And when you introduce Reiki into a person's energy field or into a room or into food or sacred space or your any kind of space, and you keep exposing that to Reiki, over time, the vibration is going to lift. And that's in essence how Reiki works, how energy healing works, and why Reiki is so powerful. I want to share a couple of quotes here, and these are by David Gordon, and he's the founder of Quantum Touch. So that's another book and another practice that you can write down. Again, it's in the resource list. He likes to say, I cannot heal you any more than I can digest your food, if that makes sense, right? He also says, a healer is someone who was sick and got better. A great healer is someone who was really sick and got better. All this to say, that you can heal yourself, but we cannot heal other people. That's not what we're doing. Now, I don't have a problem with the word energy healer or Reiki healer. especially for marketing purposes, it makes sense, right? Because your audience and your clients are going to understand what you mean by Reiki healer. But what you need to understand as the practitioner is that between you and your client, the real healer is the client. You as a practitioner, as a Reiki practitioner, are a channel for universal life force energy. At best, you are facilitating a healing experience. You are a channel through which, through your client's higher self, they are able to draw Reiki energy. And Reiki energy, being intelligent and divinely guided, goes where it needs to go. And if they are open to receiving that energy in that time, they'll receive it, and the results will manifest for them exactly the way it's meant to. Now, for a lot of people, they come, they receive Reiki one way or another, and they feel great immediately. Or like me, they instantly, spontaneously heal physically. But it's always beautiful and gentle, and it's never more than what you can handle. Okay. I have to mention right now that there are always many things going on at any given time, and that Reiki cannot explain everything. And that even if you have a client who experiences spontaneous healing immediately following your treatment session, and I use the word treatment here very loosely, immediately following your session, you can't give yourself any credit for that. Because as a Reiki practitioner, we're not doing anything. We're simply channeling energy. And anybody who is attuned to Reiki can do that. Of course, there are many things that we can do as practitioners to enhance the experience. We control the way the room looks and how comfortable they are. We can listen with compassion. We create sacred space. There are so many things that go into facilitating a healing session long before you've ever even intended to channel Reiki in that moment. But with regards to healing, if your client experiences a healing, it's because they healed themselves, okay? And this really goes for everything, right? Let's say you had an infection and you took some antibiotics and then you got cured. Who cured you? Well, at the end of the day, you know, people will say, obviously the doctor did because he was right and I took the drugs and I'm fine. Well, you went to the doctor. You decided to follow their advice and to go to the pharmacy. You went to the pharmacy, you gave the prescription, you waited for it, you paid for it. And not only that, you followed the prescription. You did, without you doing any of those things, none of that would have happened. And also there was that part of you that was willing to trust in the treatment, right? And you were following the protocol. That would not have happened without you, right? So you're responsible for all of it. Of course, you know, nothing happens in a vacuum, like I said. So there are many, many, many things that could have gone wrong along that way. And that's why we're grateful for the whole holistic picture. You know, good doctors prescribe good medicine. Good pharmacists prepare the right medicine, right? They don't give you the wrong one and give yours to somebody else. That could have been very bad. Right? And if that happened, well, all the energy healing in the world is not going to help that, right? It happens. But you ultimately, at the end of the day, everybody is responsible for their own healing. And that doesn't mean that you sit in a cave by yourself and you think yourself better, right? Mike Dooley, he writes the Notes from the Universe. And he's huge on law of attraction, and he has a lot of spontaneous healing stories about like physical healing. But he always says that it's, you know, especially in the spiritual world, a lot of people think, no, I'm spiritual. I don't need to go to the doctor. I can literally just ignore my pain and think myself better. And, you know, once in a while that can be true if it's something small. But that's not the point. That's not the point of these practices in spirituality. What Mike Dooley likes to say is, he says, work both ends to the middle. So you've got your spiritual practices, your positivity, your whatever it is in your spiritual toolkit that's helping you stay calm and clear-minded. And then you're also dealing with it on the very physical level where it's occurring. So whether that means getting treatments or procedures or medication, whatever that looks like, you're working both ends to the middle. Why would you compromise your health for any reason, right? I hope that makes sense to everybody. So just remembering, especially when it comes to channeling energy, Reiki, quantum touch, any form of energy healing, but especially Reiki. We are channels for this life force energy. The energy is divinely guided. It goes where it needs to go. Okay? I hope that makes sense. So we're going to do an exercise where we're going to make what's called a chi ball. So if you remember, the definition of chi is prana or life force energy. So we call this a chi ball exercise. So we're going to create energy between our hands. And I'd like you to get a sensation of doing this now before you've had your attunement. So after you've had your attunement, you can experiment with making chi balls and just to kind of see the differences in energy. And once you've had your attunement, you can absolutely then generate balls of Reiki energy between your palms. And what can you do with this energy? Whatever you like. You can send it off to someone as a form of distance healing. You can bring it back to yourself and insert it into your chakras. You can throw it up into your room and create sacred space. You can put it into your laptop to bless everything that you do on the computer, whatever you want to do. Okay. So first I'm just going to walk you through the steps and then we'll do it together. Okay, so when you're making a chi ball exercise, the first thing you do is you rub your palms together. And the purpose of that is very, very practical. We're creating heat and we're generating that energy. And then as you do that, you can just watch me for now. You don't have to do it yet. You're just going to slowly, and you do this with your eyes closed, slowly separate your hands and then bring them back together. So you're bringing them apart and then back together and then bringing them apart and back together. As if you have taffy between your hands. And I can already feel that. Yeah. So in your mind's eye, you may be able to perceive a color of the energy that you've generated or not. Just, this is all about curiosity. And just start to see what you can see. And then, you know, bringing your palms farther apart and together and farther apart and together. And if you ever lose the sensation of the energy between your hands, just bring your palms closer back together. And then it's that magnetic pull, right? And then grow your chi ball to your preferred size. So I always like to say, for the purposes of this exercise, let's stick to about the size of a basketball or something. And then once you've gotten it to the size you like, you can start to move your hands around the ball of energy, getting a feel for the sphere, okay? Feeling its shape, all right? And then just slowly bringing it back in, releasing it. Okay, so those are the steps to making a chi ball. Now, if you've never done this before, then just allow yourself to take it slow. This is one of those exercises that needs practice. Now, the odd person is usually able to get a really good grasp on a chi ball right away, especially before having an attunement. If we did this after you had your Reiki attunement, then it would have been a lot easier, but I like to do it before so you can really notice the difference of what happens. But if you're in the habit of making chi balls, and I'm not saying you have to make 3 chi balls a day every day for like 7 weeks, just, you know, once a week or so while you're meditating, play around with it. And the more you work with energy in your hands, it's just a matter of practice. The more you do something, the more sensitive you become to it. I'm not saying that the more you do this, the better you're making it up or the better your imagination gets. I mean, that is true to a degree. But the more you work with this exercise, the more sensitive you're going to become to energy. And that's that. If you want to become more sensitive to energy and to really, you know, taste the different colors of energy or really get a sense of different types of energy or to really start to open up and to feel the energies around you, this is a great exercise for that, right? Setting the intention and opening up. Because when you start to work with a chi ball, then your energetic field has to open up to sensitivity, right? And then gets used to that. And then you're putting that call out into the universe like, oh, hey, I'm ready to play ball. We're not just playing in the physical realm anymore. I want to open up to the unseen realm. I want to open up to this. Okay. Nothing scary is happening here. We're just working with energy that is all around us anyway. Okay. So it's not that we're choosing to open up this and unleash the energetic world. The energetic world is and always has been. It's just to the degree that you want to participate. Okay. All right. Let's practice. So if you have your meditative music, feel free to put that on now. And we're going to start with a few grounding breaths. So taking a nice deep inhale through the nose, closing your eyes, exhaling out through your mouth. Two more times like that. Inhale. And exhale. One more time. Inhale. And exhale. I would encourage you to keep your eyes closed for the duration of this exercise. Finding a nice, normal, comfortable pace of breathing. And when you're ready, bringing your palms together in a prayer position and just start to rub the hands together, generating heat, friction. And do that until you feel you've gotten as much heat as you like. And then when you're ready, slowly start to bring your palms apart and then back together. You're going to take it nice and slow. So we are purposely creating a magnetic pull between the hands. And it should start to feel like you've got taffy between your hands. Now, slow down. And if you can't feel the buildup of energy between your palms, then just pause for a moment and keep your hands just slightly apart until you can start to feel that energy thickening and building. And then when you can feel it, start to bring your palms apart and then slowly back together. And apart again and slowly back together. Good, nice and slow. And every time bringing your palms farther apart until you've created a ball of energy about the size of a basketball. Take it slow. Now, when you've got the size that you want, start to move your hands around this sphere of energy. And I want you to do this so that you can really get a feel for the edges, where the ball starts, where it ends, and really get that feel for a sphere of energy that you've created between your hands. Or rather that you've generated, drawing from the energy that's always around, because we know that energy cannot be created nor destroyed. We rub the palms together to create that heat so we can really feel and shape the energy that's already around us. And when you've moved your hands around the sphere, just holding the ball again between your hands, in your mind's eye, check in and see if you can perceive any color. And if you can't, that's totally fine. This is just an exercise in curiosity. And we're going to take this ball of energy that we've generated and we're just going to return it into Gaia, into Mother Earth, for her to transmute the energy. So slowly bringing your ball down. Now, if you're sitting in a chair, you can just face your palms down towards the floor and set the intention for the ball to go into the earth. But if you're actually close to the floor, you can actually bring the ball right down until your hands plant down onto the floor. This is also a great way to release any excess energy that you have in your body. Just placing your hands on the floor and intending for it to flow through your palms into the earth. And then release your hands back out, shake the palms and release the energy. Okay. So just taking a few nice deep grounding breaths here. All right. So to recap on how Reiki works, Reiki is of the highest vibrational frequency. right? So anything that spends time with Reiki, anything that Reiki is exposed to or is channeled to, is going to shift. There's just no question about that, okay? Reiki itself cannot be manipulated. So there is no sorrowful, horrible situation that can bring Reiki down. Reiki is divinely guided and intelligent, and it can do no harm. And I need to say this again, it cannot be manipulated. Reiki goes where it needs to go. Now, there are other energy healing practices out there, obviously. Some of them are more, for lack of a better phrase, manipulative than others. And I don't mean manipulative in the negative sense. I just mean it in the literal sense, where there are some practices that do involve focusing certain energies and moving them out, or you looking into your mind's eye and perceiving certain energies and you literally digging in there and moving them out, or whatever it is, it looks like that. A great example is angel healing. If you're familiar with angelic healing, especially with the early works of Doreen Virtue, and this is kind of a co-creative thing, right? Where quite often her cord cutting exercise is to visualize electric blue light, or even to invoke Archangel Michael and to visualize his sword cutting through any energetic cords or any kind of discordant energy. You may be familiar with that. Or even you yourself visualizing your own, whether it's your sword or whether it's an etheric pair of scissors, you know, this is very common in shamanic work, to visualize yourself going in there and removing the energy, or working with the energy, or shaking it up, or whatever it is. Okay. So, and that's wonderful, and that's all well and good. And Reiki can definitely support you in that work, which is specifically whether it's shamanic work or whatever else you want to call it. But Reiki itself cannot be manipulated. Okay. So we can't force a situation. We cannot force healing. You know, it's hard enough in your own body to really, really, really get a true handle on the healing process. It's easy when we're healthy, but when we're sick and we're in pain, it's frightening, and we don't know when it's going to be over. And no matter how self-aware we consider ourselves to be, no matter how in touch with our bodies we've been working hard to be, you know, all bets are off once we become sick and we're in pain. And I know you know this. What I'm trying to say is, if it's hard enough, even within ourselves, to recognize what phase of healing we might be in, how much harder would it be for other people? You know, when people come to you, you don't know where they're at, and you don't know where they're at in their healing journey. When it comes to alternative health in general, a lot of the time, by the time someone has come to see you, they've already tried everything, right? By the time someone comes to see you, they're desperate. They don't care anymore. You know, Reiki for some people is a first choice, but for a lot of people, it's a last resort, you know, and I've heard this said about everything, herbalism, aromatherapy, whatever, but let's just say, alternative complementary medicine is typically a last resort, right? So you need to be aware of that. You need to be aware that when someone is sitting in front of you and willing to pay you money for you to channel life force energy, you don't know how tired they are. You don't know what kind of grief they're moving through. You don't know what they've already paid and how much pain they're currently in, right? You don't know. And you don't know to the degree that they're hanging on to the outcome of this, whether they've completely surrendered, or whether everything is hinging on this experience. So as long as you understand as a practitioner that you're not responsible for anybody's healing, you can't be. This is true for all healers, right? Even surgeons, right? Like a surgeon will do their best, but we all know that sometimes you do your best, it just, you know, it doesn't work, right? So you, in your limited scope of practice as an energy healing practitioner, are gonna do your best, which is to channel this energy. And if you understand that, your client will understand that too. Yes, it's good to be explicit about it, which is why we have waiver forms and all of these things, and which is why I always like to train and teach people how to be very careful with how they describe Reiki and what exactly is happening in a session and what is not happening in a session. but also the energy, right? It's a bit of a yucky energy when you come across someone who truly believes that they're going to save you, right? Like the practitioners, and it doesn't matter what field it is, whether it's an allopathic field or a more holistic alternative field. If you're working with someone who really believes that they are the be-all and end-all and are the only ones who can help you with your situation, it's a very slimy, sticky feeling, because we know that that's not true, right? These practices are for everybody and we're all just conduits. And so it's more empowering for your clients, for your family, whoever it is you're planning to share Reiki with, it's more empowering for them to sit with someone who truly knows and believes that they have the power to change, or they have the power to, not or, and they have the power to accept their circumstances, no matter how hard it is. And no matter where it's going to ultimately be, you know, holding space for someone and knowing you can handle this, even if it gets worse, right? That's really empowering. I hope that makes sense. Reiki cannot cause harm. And I need to say this again, nothing is happening in a vacuum, because this happens quite a bit. I'll have students say, they had a client, they had a session, and the pain got worse for some reason, or something else came up, or they, you know, look, if someone is coming to you for Reiki healing and their main reason is because of a physical illness or pain or issue, you need to be very careful, and try not to be surprised if you get all sorts of questions afterwards. Because if someone is really suffering from a lot of pain and illness, then there's a pretty good chance that they're also receiving treatment from someone else. So let's say they're receiving physio. If they had just received physio within the last 48 hours, there's a very good chance they're going to be sore for 72 hours after that. The funny thing with Reiki is, even though anybody else can see that how they're feeling is likely a result of the other physical treatment or the medication that they're also taking at the same time, because Reiki is such unfamiliar, uncharted territory, people hold it to a ridiculous double standard and they're likely to blame it first, which is unfair, but it happens and you need to be aware of that. It will be less likely to happen if you've been extremely clear with your client in the first place about what Reiki is and what it isn't. Does that make sense? You know, people really only get upset if they have an expectation that was not met. You know, a lot of people who've never tried Reiki before, like myself included, they don't have any expectations at all. They're not expecting any kind of change. They're expecting to get duped. They're expecting to get disappointed. And so when they do have a positive outcome, they're like, oh, well, that was fun. Well, isn't that nice to have a non-invasive way to work with the body in a way that brings relief, you know? And so it just does come down to your confidence in yourself and other people and their ability to heal. Because if you believe inherently that your body knows what it's doing and you have your own divine intelligence and that you're always working towards healing, which your body does. The whole point of your body always going towards homeostasis is the fact that it's always, always bringing itself back into healing. The minute you get a cut, you don't have to tell yourself, start healing now. No, your body heals on its own. It does whatever it needs to do. Your body is breathing on its own. You know, you've got that whole nervous system that's operating without your intent, right? We know that. And so if it's true for you, it's true for everybody, okay? And so the best healers are the ones that empower their clients to know that they are their own real healer. When it comes to Reiki and energy healing, the worst thing that can happen is that nothing happens. Okay? Reiki cannot do any harm. Cannot do any harm. It doesn't matter what kind of treatments that you're going through or what kind of medications you're currently on or supplements or whatever it is. It's not going to interfere with that. It's not going to be you're not going to have an adverse reaction. There are no drug-drug interactions with Reiki or anything like that, okay? It's not going to cause any harm. Reiki doesn't work that way. The worst thing that can happen is that nothing happens. But is that ever what happens? You know, and I say nothing happens in the sense that a lot of the time you'll get a delayed effect. Reiki is not something that only happens within the space of a controlled 30-minute session. You know, like 30 minutes, I've paid for this time. That's the only time I'm getting Reiki. No, you know, especially if you're channeling Reiki in such a way that you intend for it to continue to flow with your client, which I'm going to teach you how to do. This is how I like to do it for my clients. And this is how I'm going to encourage you, although you could do whatever you like. But that's how I'm going to encourage you to do it, is that Reiki will continue to flow for your client long after the session, for as long as they need it, right? And Reiki is graceful and gentle and subtle. The shifts are profound, but quite often you notice them looking back. You know, I remember years ago, one of my students asked me in front of the whole group, so how has Reiki changed your life? And my first thing that went out of my mouth was, I don't really think it's changed my life, really. And then I paused, and then I looked back on my life since discovering Reiki. And even though it didn't feel like it changed my life, I realized, but that being said, I am a completely different person. I don't know how that happened. It happened really slowly and really organically, and it didn't really disrupt anything. So that's quite often the effect of Reiki. Now, certainly I've heard of very dramatic shifts for sure. I can think of a handful of my students over the years for whom the shifts have been very, very hard and fast, and like their intuition has gone from like zero to seeing everybody and all the things all of a sudden. And certainly I do believe that Reiki had a hand in that. I also do believe that that was their unique dharma, and that's their mission and gift in life, which is also what they're going with, because they're fine. They're fine. but for the most part, it's very gentle. It's graceful. It's controlled by you, you know, because at the end of the day, you're still the one who decides. You know, a spirit shows us signs all the time, and it's up to us if we're going to follow the signs, you know, at first spirit. And when I say spirit, I don't mean like particular spirits. I mean like spirit, God, the universe, the spiritual world. You know, they always start by like tapping us on the shoulder and maybe nudging us in the right direction. If we don't listen and we really, really, really need the help, maybe it's more of a shove. Or maybe it gets to the point where it's like the universal frying pan up the side of the head, you know? And I think we all know what that feels like. I think everybody, have you ever had something happen to you where it felt like the universe was hitting you upside the head with a frying pan? I think we've all kind of been there. Anybody over the age of 10 has been there. Right? It's those signs. And quite often when we're looking at that, we look back and we're like, oh man, I've been tapped on the shoulder for years. And I wasn't listening. I was trying to go down this path, but it's just not blew up. Right? When we invite Reiki into our lives, I'm not saying that that doesn't happen. I mean, a lot of the time you're able to perceive signs from spirit a lot more clearly. It doesn't stop people from, myself included, you know, I can hear the signs clearly. It doesn't stop me from being like, no, I'm still going to do what I know in my limited mind to be right. And in those cases, I always have felt that there is an energy holding me and holding my hand through the worst things. You know, Reiki is not going to stop the whole spectrum of life experiences from happening to you, but it can support you and hold your hand through it. And when you're ready to work with spirit, you know, tapping into life force energy, it can make your process a lot more bearable, if that makes sense. Okay. When working with Reiki, it's never choice. You never have to ask yourself, should I do Reiki or should I do this? Just do both. Like I said, Reiki is not going to interfere. If anything, Reiki can help to enhance whatever it is you're already doing, right? So whether you're taking any kind of medication, you can Reiki that medication. A lot of people have found that Reiki has reduced side effects from treatment. Now, again, I can't promise this. I'm just sharing what I've heard and what I've read and all I've heard and all I've read from other people is that they have found, you know, that Reiki can help. You know, Reiki can help to reduce side effects. One of the biggest studies you can see in the slide here on that is the Cross Cancer Institute Reiki Research Study. I'll get to that in a moment. But suffice it to say, you don't need to choose, okay? I will say one thing. If you ever have a client come to you and they say they're in pain and they say they're in like 9 or 10 out of 10 pain, that is a medical emergency. Okay, even if they're standing in front of you and they're like, oh, 9 out of 10, 10 out of 10. You know, they're probably someone like me with a ridiculously, stupidly high pain tolerance, which is not a gift, it's a curse, because it means that by the time you deal with something, stuff has gotten way out of hand. And so in that situation, I'd be like, great. So you were willing to spend the next hour with me. That means that your family is fine for the next hour. That means I think I'm going to refund you for today and you're going to go to the doctor right now instead of coming here. Okay. And that's like, whether, honestly, if somebody came to me with that incredible amount of pain, whether they were coming to me for Reiki or for massage or whatever it is, I'd be like, you know what? Clearly you have the afternoon. So I'm going to encourage you to take this hour that you would have spent with me, and you're going to, whether you go to the ER or the Medi Center or whatever, you need to do something about that, because pain, that is like, if someone says it's 9 out of 10, 10 out of, that is a medical emergency, even if they're standing right in front of you. Okay. I just want to mention that. We're going to get deeper into actually working with people tomorrow, but keep that in the back of your mind, please. Okay. Take all the healing you can. That's true holistic health. A lot of people misunderstand holistic health, right? They think that holistic health is okay, we'll look at the full spectrum of health. This here is the allopathic side. We're going to cut that out, and we're only going to accept anything that is natural and or alternative or whatever. That's not holistic health. That's half health, right? That's just this. That's no different from saying that I'm only going to do medical stuff and anything that I'm not interested in the energetics of things or the energy or mindset or spirituality. That has nothing to do with me, and I just want to do the medical stuff. That's also half health. Holistic health is all of the things, right? God is everywhere. God is in your surgeon's hands, right? There are a lot of people who go into the realms of healing. If you have the call to be a healer, we need all of these different things. There are people out there who were born obsessed with eyes. And thank goodness, because we need people who specialize in eyes. We need people who specialize in the heart. We need people who specialize in bones, in whatever capacity, right? We need people who specialize in energy, right? And so in the same way that you wouldn't judge, and I hope you wouldn't judge all holistic health practitioners as kooks, oh, because they practice energy healing and all that alternative stuff, they're probably not very intelligent and have no advanced education, and they're probably not very smart. Is that fair? I would hate to think that that's how people think of me. That's not true for sure. Even if I didn't have like a nursing background, that's not true. But it's not fair then to look at other people with a medical background and be like, oh, they're closed-minded. How could you be closed-minded with that much education? It doesn't make sense. They're closed-minded. They're not into it. They probably don't even know what a tarot deck looks like, blah, blah, blah. That's not fair either, right? That's judgmental, closed-minded, half health. Okay, holistic health is take it all. You deserve the best. So take it all. All of it. Use your spiritual toolkit to help you find a practitioner who vibes with you, right? Take it all. You deserve it all. Reiki, again, will not adversely affect any medication or treatment. One of the biggest Reiki research studies was actually done here in Edmonton at the Cross Cancer Institute. And to just make a very long story short, it was a double-blind placebo study. And they basically found that people who were undergoing chemotherapy, who were receiving Reiki, had significantly less side effects in the way of nausea and fatigue and even anxiety, right? Which is huge, you know? And what a gift for people who are already going through such invasive treatment to offer them a modality that is completely gentle, right? And not at all invasive. In fact, there doesn't have to be any kind of physical contact, which is really important, especially with people undergoing chemo because they're immunocompromised. And it's just not a good idea, especially if you can't guarantee your own condition if we can avoid physical contact, then why not? You know, it's not going to take away from the treatment. How they did this is fascinating. So they had two groups, right? Nobody knew what group they were in. And they had two practitioners. The practitioners were given the same treatment room and were instructed to perform an energy healing treatment exactly the same way. Same music, same length of time, same sequence of events. The only difference was one practitioner was attuned to Reiki and the other one was not. And they found that beyond a shadow of a doubt, people who were receiving the treatment from the person who was attuned to Reiki had much more positive effects. Okay. And then finally, there's Reiki Science by Torsten Lange. He's coined his own phrase, Reiki Science. And I mentioned earlier about the hidden messages in water by Masaru Emoto, and how he has demonstrated through his work with his water, his ice crystal photographs, that words and thoughts and music and everything, energy affects the physical form. And he was able to demonstrate that through water. They did the same formal study with Reiki, and they were able to demonstrate how Reiki changes the molecular structure of water. So if you're interested in looking deeper into that, he teaches an entire practitioner program based on that. I just recently discovered it myself. So just Google Reiki Science. I think his website is reikiscience.com. He has a few websites. So just Google that. It's right here on the slide and you can look that up later on. Okay. I do have a few addendums that I would like to mention here. All right. While Reiki has no side effects and is safe for all populations, I will recommend that you are extremely wary of working with people who have schizophrenia, major clinical depression, any major mental disorder, including bipolar disorder, or any mild to moderate mental disorder that's not well managed. I'm not saying don't work with these people. I'm saying be very careful. Let's put aside the mild to moderate mental disorders that are not well managed. Let's think of the more extreme. When you're working with people who have any of these major conditions, I would highly recommend you get very special training with that, because we do know that there's an increased risk for the practitioner. Okay. I don't have to tell you about the things that have been happening in the news. We know what can happen when people who are majorly mentally ill are not given the treatment that they need. And sometimes the results can be extremely violent, and that could be on your end or on theirs. Suffice it to say, as an energy healing practitioner with a rather limited scope of practice, I would say that this is far beyond our scope of practice. Okay. It's not a bias. It's not a fear thing. It's about safety, mainly of themselves and for you. You may or may not be familiar with many of the articles that have come out poo-pooing meditation. Now, I never thought in my entire life that I would ever read an article discouraging people to meditate, because, well, it happens, right? Anything that becomes popular eventually becomes vilified. It happened with yoga. Yoga was the best thing in the world. And then not too long after, out comes those studies. Oh, yoga injures more people than it helps, and it's dumb and not functional. There's always a kernel of truth, right, in these studies. I'm just trying to say, before I go too deep into that rabbit hole, that anything that becomes popular is eventually vilified. It happened with Zumba. Zumba is the best thing in the world. It's super fun. Zumba is making all the physiotherapists rich. CrossFit is the best thing in the world. It'll make you super strong. CrossFit is making all of the physiotherapists rich. Oh, bar is the coolest thing in the world. Oh, bar is making all the physiotherapists rich. You know, meditation is the coolest thing in the world. And when meditation really exploded, and for the first time in my life, I'm like, I never thought that meditation would become sexy. I was like, just you wait. it's only going to be a matter of time before we start seeing articles like how meditation ruined my marriage, that type of thing. Well, it wasn't long until after I saw an article, many articles actually saying how irresponsible these healthcare practitioners and psychologists are for prescribing meditation. They should know better. Now, the kernel of truth that comes from that is this. When you are already mentally unstable, it's not a good idea to bring that person into an altered state of consciousness. Does that make sense? That's pretty obvious to me. It really is. So even you, assuming you are of sound mind and body, if you've ever gone astral traveling, and I'm not talking about with psilocybin or anything like that, I mean like straight up sober astral traveling, deep guided meditations, you know it's a trip, right? Like, whoa. It's a trip. And you're already of sound mind and sound body. So can you imagine the potential harm that that might cause for somebody who is not mentally and mentally sound? Okay. So try to look at it a different way. Let's say, let's bring it back to exercise. Okay. We know exercise is good for you. Right, a boot camp class. Oh yeah, to be outside, to be working your heart and to be running and pausing and running and pausing and doing push-ups and all of those things, that's so good for you. Is that good for everybody? Is it good for most people? What about somebody who just came out of the hospital because they suffered a really bad motor vehicle accident and they've got a lot of breaks and they're still in a lot of pain? Then is boot camp still good for them? No. Not even a little bit. In fact, most people would agree that in that situation, boot camp will cause harm, right? It's the same with extreme mental illness. Now, I just have to mention this. I've yet to come across it myself. And it's not likely, although I don't know anything about you or your life situation or who you know. So it's not likely that it will ever be an issue for you. And again, to further complicate things, will people disclose this to you? I don't know. If you've ever watched House, that show House, and he likes to say about his patients, everybody lies. Everyone lies. Well, I can tell you, working as a nurse, everyone lies. And I did quite a few stints in mental health, not at Alberta Hospital, but I was working with people who had they were older people, but they had spent like the majority of their lives in Alberta Hospital, in and out. I loved it. I love that line of work. But suffice it to say, I'm so grateful for my experience there because I wouldn't be putting anybody like that in an altered state of consciousness. It's not that Reiki itself is the issue. It's that typically when you're channeling Reiki in a formal healing session, you're bringing people into an altered state of consciousness. That's the problem. It's also that, you know, even if you just had them lying on a table and you didn't lead them into any kind of meditative state, even if you didn't even guide them through breath, you know, if you have any kind of healing music on that is a particular frequency, that's going to change your brain frequency. It works. It does. And it works regardless of whether it's good for you. Your Spotify playlist is not going to magically turn off if it realizes that the person in the room can't handle that kind of frequency on a physical level, right? Like on a neurological, physical level, it's going to keep playing. So in order to mitigate that risk, I'm just saying, if you are aware that somebody who is interested in working with you has a major mental disorder, depending on your scope of practice and your experience and taking everything into account, just be careful. Okay. If this is something that interests you, I would highly recommend taking a course in nonviolent crisis intervention. Nonviolent crisis intervention. And it's usually exactly that phrase. So no matter where you live, if you just look up nonviolent crisis intervention, you'll find these workshops quite often in, you know, healthcare facilities. And another one you'll want to look into is something called mental health first aid. So there's first aid, standard first aid that you take for, you know, bumps and bruises and breaks and all that kind of stuff. And what's the point of a first aider? Not to be the EMT and not to be the doctor, but to keep people as safe and protected as possible and very quickly getting them to the people who can help them, right? That's first aid. Like, you're there on the scene. There is a mental health version of that. And again, the point of that is not to become a mental health counselor. It's to keep people safe, keep everybody around safe as quickly as possible, get them to the help that they need. So if you're finding that, if you're just looking, reflecting on your own life and your situation and your work, and you're realizing, you know what, there's actually a very, very good chance that I'm going to be coming up, brushing up against these kinds of people, take your mental health first aid, get certified in nonviolent crisis intervention. Nonviolent crisis intervention does not mean that you are going to learn kung fu skills so that you will not be able to get hit when people attack you, because that is that you're going to work in mental health. You have to be prepared for the fact that people are going to physically assault you. It's how to decrease the load of a punch, and how to get away as quickly as possible. You're still going to get punched one way or another if you're going to work in that realm, but how to absorb it and then get away. So again, this is a very, very specific topic I'm talking about. I never like to say, don't work with this kind of person or don't do this. I'm not going to tell you what to do. I'm just sharing the facts. Okay. Now, why did I mention mild to moderate mental disorder that's not well managed? So because anything that's mild to moderate, that's not well managed, is a hop, skip, and a jump away from something that could escalate and not be well managed. And let that be a lesson even to yourself, okay? So if you are aware that you probably have mild to moderate mental health issues and you need to take care of yourself that way, are you managing it? Okay, you need to manage it. You need to find a way to manage it. Can Reiki help with managing that? It can sometimes be a useful ally as part of a big program. I'm very, very sensitive about mental health issues, which is why I dedicate a lot of time talking about it. It's the stigma is horrible because it stops people from getting the help that they need. And it also leads people to seeking help the wrong way. Quite often, a lot of the time, the only thing that can help is something more chemical. People need Zoloft. There are people out there that really need it. And it's just too bad that, you know, people don't take it simply as a matter of principle. If you really need it, then let yourself take it. You know, eventually you may be able to wean off. That's not my business. I'm just saying, everybody has to do what's right for them. And it's important that you allow your clients to do what is right for them and that you don't shame them either way. But the fact remains that in the very unlikely but still possible chance that you might be working with someone who could potentially cause you or themselves harm, I would encourage you to really, really think about that. And that's all I'm saying. Okay? Again, it's not the Reiki itself that causes the harm. There is a huge difference between channeling distance Reiki to all sentient beings as part of your spiritual practice, or let's say you work in a hospital and it's part of your weekly ritual to channel Reiki to everybody in the hospital. That's not to say that you're going to drive everybody insane. Of course, it's not what happens. Reiki doesn't cause harm. But a Reiki treatment in and of itself, just the whole premise behind the expectation there is already a dangerous premise. And the whole sequence of events, that is what can be risky. And if you have any questions about that, any clarification, do let me know. But we're going to move on for now. I think I've hammered that point home. Okay. So where can you find Reiki? Reiki is everywhere. Okay. In the whole spectrum of health. You can find it at independent wellness clinics, such as maybe yours, if you have your own practice, maybe you rent a room or you offer a practice out of your home. You'll find it at the spa. You'll find it at massage studios. You'll find it at yoga studios. You'll find it at meditation studios. You'll find it at chiropractic clinics, some, not all. You'll even find it at counseling practices, and you may even find it at some psychological practices. Reiki can also be found being offered to patients in the hospital and residents at long-term care. So local examples here to where I live in Edmonton is you can find it at the Cross Cancer Institute, you can find it at the Stollery Children's Hospital, you can find it at the Pilgrims Hospice Center, and you can find it at the Edmonton General. Okay, and this is just a small list. There's probably a lot more places. Reiki is taught by many different kinds of people with different types of backgrounds. So independent master teachers such as myself, or maybe you. You'll find it in academic settings such as colleges as well. And you'll even find it in, I've seen it at the aesthetics program. I've seen Reiki Level 1 is one of the required courses that everybody who goes into an aesthetics program takes at the Evelyn Charles Academy. I've heard of nursing students graduating from the University of Saskatchewan, and part of their course was Reiki Level 1. You know, you can take it as a continuing education course at Mount Royal University and McEwen University. And this is just a small sampling. Like, you'll find it everywhere. If you Google, an article came out not too long ago about listing all of the hospitals in the United States that offer Reiki. Some of these hospitals had dedicated wings to Reiki, and some of them just had staff that went around and did Reiki. And for the most part, the staff is volunteer. And last time I checked, that was also the case with Alberta Health Services. It is volunteer. Because I totally empathize with that, because thinking about it from an HR standpoint, I can't even imagine what it would look like to pay somebody for energy healing. I think it's already a huge step that it's even being offered on a volunteer basis. That's huge. So you can find Reiki everywhere. It's the full spectrum. Let's talk a little bit about the system of Reiki. So as I've just explained, Reiki is taught by many different kinds of people. And we are learning Usui Reiki. For the most part, there are a lot of things that these trainings have in common. And one thing that most Reiki trainings have in common is that there are three levels: level one, level two, and level three master teacher. After that, everybody kind of differs, okay? Reiki being unregulated means that as far as curriculum goes and training goes, there is no standard. There are Reiki franchises and associations and their own systems and schools, which outline for their own members what they're going to be teaching. So in that case, yes, there is some sort of standardization, but that's more on a business standpoint. So there is no government body that's overseeing this. So what that essentially means is whether you took the course from a master teacher in a group workshop setting like this, or you were completely self-taught and taught yourself mainly from books and personal experience, and then you happen to have a friend who was a Reiki master who gave you an attunement, those two situations, you're both a Reiki practitioner. Okay. So typically with level one, the emphasis is learning how to do hands-on healing for yourself and others, and there's no coverage on symbols. Level two, you're introduced to the first three symbols in Reiki. So there's the Choku Rei, Seiheiki, and Honshizei Shonen, and then you're taught how to do distance healing. Now, of course, you're taught many other things within this course, but this is like the essence of it, the crux, the most important parts. And then level three master teacher, you are given an attunement to the master symbol, the Daikomyo, and you're taught how to attune others. And you may also be taught advanced techniques such as psychic surgery and chakra balancing and more. I'm just going to say with psychic surgery, it's not what it sounds like. It is a way, it's unlike Reiki where you're just channeling the energy and you're just letting go and letting God. Psychic surgery, you are actually getting in there and you're tapping into your client's auric field and you're working with energy blockages. Please don't misunderstand me. We're not doing like an energetic equivalent of moving physical illness. So if someone presents to you and they have like a cyst or something and they know where it is, you're not going to be energetically removing. That's not what this is. Okay. That's not what the psychic surgery is. It's more about like energetic blockages, things that weigh heavy on your heart type of thing. Get into that in level three. Now, there are a few differences here. So some teachers will take the level three master teacher course and they'll split it into two different courses. I don't do that. I teach everything all in one. And it kind of makes things complicated for people when you don't do that, because, you know, level three master, once you have the master symbol, you are able to attune others. End of story. It's a dichomial master symbol, which obviously has so many other properties. But what that does, the main gift of dichomio, is it enables you to share the gift of Reiki with others. I'm having more and more people now come to me because I also teach the Violet Flame Reiki training, asking if they can take it, because one of the prerequisites of the Violet Flame Reiki training is level three. And they say, well, they don't have their teacher certificate, a certificate saying that they're a teacher, but they do have a certificate saying that they're a Reiki master, which basically implies that of the two master training courses that their teacher offered, they only took the one. And as long as they are attuned to the dichomio, they can pass attunements. The only thing is whether or not they were taught to do so. And so I will always choose to do that, because why not? You're already there. Let's just make it simple. But other people differ, and other people throw other things into the mix, into the curriculum. I certainly throw my own things into the mix, and no one does it better than another person. It really does come down to your own personal preference and also what works for you at the time, right? Whether or not it even fits your schedule. So another difference is that, and this isn't very common, but I've experienced it myself too. I've also taken a Reiki training where it was taught this way, where in level one, you got the first Reiki symbol, and then level two, you got the second and the third, and level three, you got the fourth. But typically with level one, there's no symbols. And I like that way. It was easier for me to learn it that way, because a lot of the time, especially if you're just coming to Reiki as a total beginner, it's hard enough just to grasp the fact that Reiki even is a thing and that it works, and then you're going to throw symbols into the mix. With that being said, if you're teaching it all together, it's really, really, really nice, because you have that foundation, and then we can get right into the symbols. I've been teaching Reiki level one and two as a combined course for the majority of my career teaching Reiki. I used to teach it as separate courses, but what I did find was that the majority of people in level one were asking questions that would have been answered if they would come for the level two. And so most people who come for level one really are, they want level two. They just don't know yet, right? Typically what would happen is, if I had level one on a Saturday, level two on a Sunday, I'd have 10 people sign up. Let's just say, to keep numbers easy, if I had 10 people sign up for level one, I'd have 5 people for level two. It was always 50% of however many signed up for level one. But by the end of the day of level one, almost everybody will have been signed up for level two. They'll be like, oh, actually, I need to take the next one. Of course, some people wouldn't, and it was mostly a scheduling thing, like they really could only make the Saturday. And then when I realized that, I'm like, you know, I'm just going to offer it as one big course. And if people can only do the level one, they can let me know, and I'll make allowances for that. But I just found that everybody had a much more empowering learning experience, learning it exactly the way you're doing it right now. For the record, that is also how it was taught many, many, many years ago in Japan. It became a common, and this is part of the myth of Reiki, is some people will say you need X amount of time between level one and level two before you can, you know, assimilate or progress or whatever. And it's like, I don't think you understand what this is. I don't know what you think you're working with, but that's not how that works. Because again, it's not like you need to energetically digest anything. With the attunement, we are connecting to an energy that we're already connected to. Okay. Mikao Yasui and Shijiro Hayashi, when they were in Japan, they would do both. Hayashi would teach Reiki level one one weekend, Reiki level two in another weekend, but he did many tours around the country. And when he did that, he did it all in one weekend. So it really just comes down to logistics. Okay. Anything after that is mythology and superstition. In my opinion, it's just the universe, according to Timmy, but you're not losing anything. Okay. There are so many, a lot of the mythology and the superstition that I myth bust with Reiki are all of the rules that people impart on it. You know, like all of the restrictions people put and all of the tests that people have to pass, so to speak, before they can prove themselves worthy of an attunement. There's nothing to prove yourself of. If you have the call to channel healing energy through your body, that is a karmic, dharmic life mission call. And who am I to say that you're not able to do that? If you want to learn it, you should. I would go as far as to say that this is basic life skills. And if you don't know Reiki, I feel bad for you. Or even if you're, you know, like that's, if you don't want to, that's fine. That's your prerogative. But if you're open to all forms of energy healing and you haven't yet allowed yourself to experience the beautiful gift that is Reiki, then what a waste. Reiki attunement. So that is the thing that really makes Reiki different from other forms of energy healing, is that within the system of Usui Reiki, there are attunements. And an attunement is a ritual performed by a Reiki master signifying the student's decision to connect to Reiki. The attunement is purely energetic in nature. It works on the subtle level. So neither physical distance nor time will affect your ability to receive an attunement, nor anyone's ability to pass the attunement. Okay? And that is true. So technically, all Reiki attunements are distance attunements. Even if you and I were in the same room, even if I could touch your shoulders, it doesn't matter, because it's not the touching of the shoulders that imparts the attunement. I'm not doing anything to you. We are operating under a system that Usui Reiki created to help his students learn this healing art. We're just following a very long tradition is what we're doing. There are many different attunement rituals. You could go on YouTube right now and Google Reiki attunement or how to do Reiki attunement. You're going to come up with 100 different versions. It's not the attunement. It's not the ritual itself. It's not the choreography or whatever it is, the steps that you're going through. It's the intention, the joint intention of the Reiki master channeling and your intention to receive. That's what activates everything. And that's what makes that attunement. Only you can do that. I can't force an attunement on you, right? You can't take an attunement that's been programmed into an audio track and play it in a stadium and magically attune everybody behind their back. That's not how that works, right? People have to want it to get it. And that's how it is with life. And certainly that's how it is with Reiki, okay? I hope I've made myself clear with that. So there's typically one attunement per level. And that's how it's done. That's how it's been done in like the more modern way of doing it. So one attunement for level one, one for level two, one for level three. You could also combine attunements where you could give, you know, if you know you're going to be training someone in all three levels and they're staying with you for the whole weekend, you could just give them all of the attunements in one. But there is another way of doing attunements where it's split up into four different ones. So that's another difference here with the system of Reiki. Another way that I've heard of is that there's four attunements, each of level one, two, and three. So if you go with that kind of training, it doesn't change anything. The attunement effect is still the same. The only difference is it's four different rituals in order to complete the full attunement or the full transmission of energy for that Reiki level one energy, if that makes sense. So a way of looking at it is this. Let's say there's a teacher and two parallel universes. In this universe, she decided to do one attunement for her class. So at 9 o'clock, she did the attunement. At 10 o'clock, a fire started in the building and they all got out. But everybody got attuned. In an alternate universe, she decided to do four attunements. She did an attunement at 8 a.m. She did another one at 9 a.m. 10 a.m., the fire started. Everybody got out. But in that alternate universe, because they didn't finish the attunements, it wasn't finished. So they have to start all over again. Okay. At the end of the day, the effect is the same. It's just a matter of how you're breaking apart the rituals. I don't really know the theory behind it. I just know that, you know, Reiki's been around for some time, and depending on where your lineage broke off and how you were trained, you're going to be doing it that way. I was trained by, like, all of my teachers taught me to do it one attunement per level. So that's all I know. That's all I'll say. Okay. Again, it doesn't matter. As long as you get your attunement one way or another, that's what matters. Attunements don't expire or fade over time. Once you've received a Reiki attunement to that level, you never need another. So it's not going to fade. If you received an attunement as a baby, you're still good to go. Now, chances are you're probably going to receive many more attunements, especially if you really resonate with the practice of Reiki, then you're going to find yourself doing Reiki shares and doing more Reiki workshops and learning with other people. And there's a very good chance that you're going to keep getting different attunements. And that's just fun for, you know, I love it for my own learning. An attunement is more than just enabling someone to become a channel for energy. Attunements are also healing experiences in and of themselves, right? My first healing attunement experience was through that DVD, which was filmed in the 80s, by the way. So that just goes to show how far the energy travels. And it was an attunement, and it creates that healing, right? You know, in palliative care, it's very common to give people attunements. Even though you know that they're not likely going to be around to use it, that's not the point. The point is it's still an energetic gift. It still shifts the energy in your body, still cleanses and charges and, you know, boosts your chakras. Once you are attuned to Reiki, you are instantly able to channel Reiki through your body and your breath. Reiki cannot cause harm, so you're able to safely and effectively channel Reiki to others right after your level one attunement, okay? That's another thing where some schools kind of disagree. So some teachers say that after level one, you still can't work on other people. You can only work on yourself, not until after level two. That's ridiculous. You can absolutely, there. What's the harm? Reiki cannot cause any harm. Reiki is profoundly simple and effective. So as long as you're honoring your client and you're asking their consent, I highly encourage people, especially people who come to me for private training and they just do level one and then they have to wait for a while before they do their level two. That's really how you're gonna learn, because until you start practicing in other people, you're going to think that you're making it up. And there's a huge difference between receiving Reiki from somebody else and giving Reiki to yourself. The effect is the same, but the actual experience is different. So it's just like this, you know, you can definitely massage yourself and it will work and it will be effective. But I think we can all agree there's a huge difference between massaging yourself and seeing someone for a professional treatment, right? Even if that person was only going to massage you for the same amount of time that you were going to do yourself, it's a completely different experience. It's the same with Reiki. But it's just so powerful when you're practicing with somebody for them to tell you like, wow, I really felt that. Or how did you know to go there? Or wow, I could feel that heat. Or wow, I feel so much better. Then you know this works. You know it's bigger than you and it's not about you and you're not making it up. And you won't get that experience unless you practice with other people. So not only is it safe for you or okay for you to practice after a level one attunement, I highly recommend it. And I know it's kind of a moot point for the purposes of this course because it's level one and two combined. But if you're ever in a situation where you're teaching and you're choosing to split apart the levels, then do keep that in mind. How to channel Reiki is very simple. You simply set the intention to connect to Reiki. Once you've received your attunement, the minute you intend healing, it will start to flow. In the beginning, it's really helpful to have a cue in your mind. So for many years, I would have Reiki on as my cue, or sometimes I would say Reiki flow. Some people just say Reiki, and then it will start to spontaneously flow. But the truth is, Reiki will spontaneously flow whenever you need healing. Or if you're sitting with somebody and on a higher self level, they're open to Reiki, and you just happen to be a channel for Reiki, Reiki will draw through you, right? Reiki goes where it needs to go. The beautiful thing about Reiki is because it you're a channel and it goes through you first before you're able to channel it to others. Every time you share the gift of Reiki, you're receiving Reiki at the same time. So unlike other forms of healing, even other forms of energy healing, sharing the gift of Reiki is invigorating. It's not exhausting. It's not draining. And it's a one-way transmission. So you're less likely, if at all, to really feel and hang on to other people's energies, even if you're already extremely empathic and you find that that's true. Well, I'll be perfectly honest with you. When you get your Reiki attunement, if you think you're empathic now, just wait, you know, because your psychic senses are really going to open up. But I hope that you realize that it's up to you if you're going to hang on to it. You know, just because you feel somebody else's pain in that moment doesn't mean you have to make it your problem. Doesn't mean you have to walk around with it all day. People are not walking around wishing their pain on others. That's not why they're seeing you. It's you. It's up to you if you're going to hang on to it or not. And with Reiki, I find a lot of people are really able to release that more, and they're able to feel and acknowledge other people's pain, but they're not hanging on to it anymore. It's also up here, because if there's a part of you that really feels responsible for somebody else's healing, then you're going to feel their pain long after their pain has left them, because you've made it your problem. and you don't know what's going on with them. So the problem you've made is a problem that you've invented that you're just going to continue to perpetuate within yourself. In the meantime, your client's fine, right? And practicing Reiki is a practice of surrender. So that's one of the gifts. It comes. It helps you to surrender and to trust people to heal, which is what it's all about. We're going to go for our lunch break. And when we come back, we're going to open with an exercise that I call breathing through the palms. And then we're going to do our attunement, and I will guide you through a healing meditation, and we'll make our Reiki Chi ball. Okay. So these are the instructions for breathing through the palms. Again, I'll just walk you through it, and then we'll do it together. Breathing through the palms. So when you inhale, you're going to visualize Reiki, and usually people see it as a bright crystalline rainbow light just entering through your crown chakra, gathering at your heart chakra. And then as you exhale, feeling it pulse out through your palms. So inhale, drawing Reiki through the crown, exhale, feeling it pulse out through the palms. And it's as simple as that. So that is breathing through the palms. And with the Reiki attunement, we're going to experience that as well. Okay.